I'm speaking of Mr. Lance King, who's actually the power metal vocalist for his solo album. He was also in a band way back when called Gemini. He was also in Balance of Power, Pure Maze, Defiance, Avian, Empire, Magic Kingdom, also Shining Star, as well as also he is actually the owner of Nightmare Records. What's going on, Mr. Lance King?
Well, geez, with an intro like that, well, how do I follow up? I'm busy as always, but great.
Yeah, I know. You have an awesome catalog going on there at Nightmare Records, you know?
Thank you. Yeah, I think so.
Anyways, let's get off of the Nightmare Records and let's get on to your solo album career, all right?
Sounds good.
Awesome. So you want to tell me, what made you actually want to do a solo album career?
Well, you know, that's a very good question. After being in the industry for about 30 years and singing with, as you've stated, a number of bands, I've come to the conclusion that I'm tired of the frickin' drama.
Nice.
I'm tired of the politics. I want to just make good music. And, you know, being the label rep, I don't have a lot of time to go out touring. I don't have a lot of time to, you know, babysit people that, you know, are drama queens. So I thought, you know, it rather than have the inner band politics, and you know, there's pluses and minuses, obviously, to both things. But after being in bands for a long time, what I've found is that just as you're starting to really gain legs and really start to break, that it gets a lot harder with the egos to keep everybody in check, and something ends up, you know,
right,
not happening. So rather than two steps forward, three steps back again, I decided that I would do the solo thing, and then I would be doing it for all the right reasons, because I'd just be making music that I enjoyed and having a great time doing it with people that are going to do it for as long as they're really into it, without any long-term commitments necessarily, and that would allow me to continue to constantly keep the magic that a lot of the bands that I've been in the past had and then lost, sort of. Well, maybe they didn't lose it, but we got to a point where continuing seemed like it would lose it. You know what I mean?
Totally understand.
This would be a way, because that I'm so busy now anyway, that would be a way that I could do something, and then I could put together a solo band and go out and tour some festivals and maybe some clubs along the way, if that made sense, and just do it for the love of it. You know what I mean? When it was possible, and it may not be possible to do that. We'll see. I'm leaving all doors open. You know, I mean, if a band that I loved called up tomorrow and told me they needed a singer, I may just jump on board and do that too. You know what I mean?
Well, you definitely should. I mean, you have the experience, and I actually have your whole entire discography, as I was mentioning to you, you know, off the air, and I'm still playing, you know, Balance of Paris and Balance of Power and also Pyramid. So I can definitely see you touring on this album as well.
You know, it would be cool, because with a solo tour, I could do songs from my back catalog. I could do, you know, a five-hour show and have lots more material left over. That's the beautiful part of it.
So you want to tell me, you know, on your brand new album, which is called, you know, A Moment in Chaos, why did you choose that name for that album?
Well, that's close, but it's actually A Moment in Kairos.
Yeah, Kairos, I meant.
You said chaos.
I meant Kairos. Sorry about that.
Chaos sounds more metal.
No, Moment in Kairos. Sorry, I just got off work getting B&B.
Sorry, back to your track. What was the question?
Sorry about that. Tell me about the name, you know, album, A Moment in Kairos. Why did you choose that name of that album?
Well, after I finished it, I was thinking about the titles, and I came up with about three or four of them, which at the moment I can't remember any of the other ones. But that was just the one that stuck out, really fitting to sum up all of the concepts that were involved in the album. And the irony is, after I sent it off, had the artist do it, and it was off to the presses, I started thinking about it. I should look up, you know, Kairos Moment or A Moment in Kairos, and then I did, and it was really interesting because I did the first link I clicked on when I did a Google for Kairos Moment came on the site that actually had a blurb about what that was, and it fit the album to a T. It was scary. Wow. It was really super synchronous and super cool. So I took that as a sign to be that it was awesome. They spelled it differently. They spelled it the correct way.
Wow.
And I had actually spelled it differently on the cover because I wanted it to kind of evoke the meaning of a physical place.
Cool.
Right?
Yep.
But it's not a physical place. The word is actually very esoteric. It's more God's time. It's more infinity. The time is different. There's Chronos and there's Kairos. They're both Greek terms for different forms of time. And Kairos means in God's time.
Cool.
So.
Hey, it's a definitely, you know, interesting cover, especially, you know, the way that it is designed. Who actually designed your album cover?
Well, I did, with the help of Marcus Sigfridsson, the guitar player of Darkwater and Harmony. He played a couple of tracks on the album. He's also a graphic artist. He does a lot of stuff for Ulterium. And my web artist had been working on some stuff for it, and then her computer totally died on her right at the time where I needed to start on this. And it was like one of those things where it was a Kairos moment, really, because things just kind of worked out to where I had to go to Marcus, who had designed a cover for Crucible, actually. And we never used it because we never got our shit together.
No, I remember Crucible, actually.
Yeah.
I saw you perform at MadFest with Crucible.
Yeah, right. Anyway, long story short, that didn't pan out. But Marcus's art was really good for it. And I, you know, he just helped me with the album. I'll ask him about it. So he started working on this stuff, and I got like 8 different versions of the cover from him and different concept, and I gave him a general concept of what I wanted, and he did like 8 versions. And finally, when he came to this one, when I made a couple of suggestion tweaks, I'm like, that's it, now we just need to refine it. And we kind of, you know, threw a bunch of different he just kept tweaking it until we got that. And it was cool. We worked together for it.
So how long did your CD take to make, you know, start to finish recording-wise?
Well, ironically, not very long. As Chronos time goes, we started, I wrote down a general outline of the concept of the album, how I wanted it to flow, what the meanings of each song would be in it, because, you know, I had a pretty specific theme going for the 11-11 time prompt phenomenon that I wanted to write about. So I knew what each song generally was going to be about. And then I just sent it out to a bunch of players that I wanted to be involved and write songs with. And within 2 weeks, I had 2 albums worth of song ideas sent to me on MP3 from all these players that wanted to be involved. And I cherry-picked all the ideas that I liked for a full album. and I liked most of them, but I picked the ones that I liked the most out of that and put the others aside. And then I just started putting the feel of each song to the general theme of each song that I'd had outlined. I've never done this before this way, but it worked slick. It was so fast. Then I just started listening to the songs with the concept in mind for each one and writing them one after another from 1, 2, 3, 4, and I would demo up the vocals, you know, sometimes one or two a day.
Wow.
And I got through all of the demos in about a week. So I'd recorded all the albums and wrote all the lyrics in about a week, okay? And after that, so we're give it even a little more. We'll say 2 weeks. So it was a month that got done, and I sent that out to everybody, and then we started tweaking the arrangements a little bit more, and then we started retracking all the instruments with real instruments, you know, better quality guitars, better, you know, real drums instead of the synthetic ones we demoed with, and real, you know, bass. Most of them, the demos, there wasn't any bass in, you know, adding keyboards in it. And we had the whole album written and recorded in 3 months' time.
Wow, that is pretty quick.
And actually, we even had it mixed and mastered in 3 months' time.
Wow.
It was crazy. It was insane. It was really, really synchronous, though. Everything just bam, 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 worked. It was great. It was magic. It's awesome.
That's cool. So you want to tell me, though, where did you get your inspirations for this solo album for your songs? I mean, how did you actually compose your writing process?
The writing process?
Yep.
Well, you know, I think when you have a clear idea of the whole in mind, it makes it a whole lot easier to work on the sub parts of it. You know what I mean? So I come up with a general theme that I wanted to write about. And for me, the concept really was, there was a numerology kind of thing behind it. And so that I could, every time I was experiencing this 11-11 time prompt phenomenon thing, and every time I would notice that particular number or other triple digit numbers, I would look them up online and I would find different meanings for each one as I experienced it. And you know, it was one of those things where, okay, it's really starting to weird me out now. I'm noticing these things all the time, so I want to know more. And it was this, you know, flighty, new age kind of stuff that, you know, was a little wispy here when I first started, a little wispy there, and then it became, started to really become concrete and really making sense. And when you know, I would experience one and I'd look for the meaning, I would find something that totally meant something, you know what I mean?
Yep.
In my life, personally. And it wasn't just, you know, the wispy, oh, you know, the angels are knocking and they're trying to get your attention kind of stuff. They were really specific kind of things. And so when I started writing lyrics, I had a general gist of the overall meaning of each of these number prompts. And then I started internalizing it as to what it meant to me personally.
Mm-hmm.
So it was really easy to kind of write the song. The songs sort of wrote themselves at that point. You know what I mean? I just started going, okay, you know, I can relate that to this story in my life, or I can relate that to the events that resonated with me for that meaning. And, you know, it was really cool how it just flowed out.
So I have to ask you this, but even though I know your back catalog of what you've been on, I've seen you perform live, but I have to pick at your brain, Lance, but what actually is your favorite album, other than your solo one, of all the bands that you are in, of what is your favorite album and why?
Huh.
Yeah.
That's easier than picking a song on my solo album, actually.
Really?
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, for sure. I don't know if I can narrow it down to one. I can narrow it down to two.
Go ahead.
And I would say balance, power, perfect balance.
Okay.
And I would say Perry Mason's Legend of Bone Carver.
That's a great album.
Yeah, I would say those two are my favorites of what I've done through the years, both for different reasons. But I love the first Perry Mason album, and I loved other Balanced Power albums too, but those are just the favorites of those bands that I have, so... and I think those two are bands were probably the highlights that I've done in my career up to the point that I'm at now with the solo thing. So, I'd say definitely those two are the two best albums that I've been a part of outside of the solo thing.
Well,
mm-hmm.
So what exactly is your musical background? I mean, where did it all get started for you to become, wanting to be a vocalist or actually... Even a record label person. What made you
want to
become both?
That's a good question. Necessity, I think.
Okay.
Necessity is the mother of invention. So, if you're an independent musician, you kind of learn to be a jack of all trades, or else you're either going to be extremely broke, or you're just not going to be doing it. You know what I mean? Because there's a necessity involved in learning how to do things yourself, because there isn't a lot of money, especially in the beginning. So you got to figure out a lot of creative ways to do things that everybody else has been, that's doing because they've been doing it longer or they had more resources to do it with. So you sort of learn how to make do in a lot of ways. Other bands might be signed to other labels. I didn't have that luxury. When Jem and I was playing, we had a lot of labels coming out and courting us, and sometimes we'd know they were there and sometimes we wouldn't until after they'd left, and that was a little disconcerting, because at the time we were playing we were a cover band, Jem and I was, and then we worked into being an original band. We were a cover band that started writing, we were playing like 5 nights a week, back when you could do that, when you could play full time and make a living gigging. We were doing that, and then we'd go into the clubs in the day and we'd write songs, and then we'd try them out on the audience at night to see if they sucked or not, and the next day we'd either rewrite them or we'd trash them, and at the end of the month we'd have about 2-3 songs that we really liked, and we'd record them with money that we'd saved up through the month, and then we'd move on. So when we were being approached by Atlantic and PolyGram and a few others, managers that flown over from England to see us and all this stuff, this was still at a time when music, there was big money in music, and we didn't have as much material as we needed, to be honest. We were drawing these huge crowds. People were hearing about the band. They'd come out and see us. And then we couldn't deliver enough material when they were interested, was what happened. So then the necessity came where they'd come and they'd show up and we didn't know they were there. And, they'd say, good little cover band.
Oh, my God.
We didn't know to stick all of our originals in any one part of the show and highlight, key into that, because we didn't know they were there. But so the necessity was part in that. We'd written this album and we wanted to put it out, and by the time we got it together, which really only took us a year, we were too late to the table. Our Atlantic rep had moved to Giant Records and she wasn't doing the same thing. And everybody moves around so fast and the music business changes so quickly that we didn't have the opportunities. So I created a label and we put it out on CD and cassette. We pressed up about 10,000 copies of the first album, and we sold it at the shows because we were playing all the time. right?
Right.
And that was a beautiful thing. I mean, we just bring along a person to sell merch. And the first night we did that, we sold 100 units, right?
Wow.
There. And we continued to do that kind of thing because at the time we were drawing, you know, 600 to 1,000 people at every show. It was really, we were doing really well. So we would sell right there without any middleman, no cuts. We'd make, you know, we were selling $10 a unit, and we made money hand over fist for our music. It was great. So we were able to reinvest, and we bought ourselves a studio with it. Made our own studio, so we recorded our second album in our own studio. And we just kept doing those kinds of things where we'd, you know, use it. Or I would, after I left the band, that band, continue to utilize, you know, your resources as you go to build the long-term things, you know, the next thing that you need to do, you'd invest in, you know, with the profits of the last thing that you figured out and made, the last thing that worked. You know, you'd reinvest it into the next thing that your next great plan of attack, you know. And that's how Nightmare Records was born, and that's how my career has pretty much been run since day one, where I just constantly thought about what I needed to help promote the music.
So are you going to be touring with this album? Do you have any plans right now?
I got some festival offers, and I've been making plans. I don't know if it's going to come to fruition or not, but yeah, there's some very interesting things in the works.
That's pretty cool. So I'm going to pick at your brain again about Nightmare Records, but how's it actually working with such awesome, you know, bands and musicians on there? I mean, it's probably just incredible.
Well, you know, it's interesting. I was never one of those fanboys that had bands pictures on my walls. You know, I had Farrah Fawcett on my walls. I didn't have Motley Crue on my walls, and things like that. So I never bought the metal magazines. I never entered a phase of fandom, if you will. I loved the music. So I've never been that guy that would bug people for autographs or, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
I don't know if you know what I mean.
Of course I do. I know what you mean.
So I'm like, I just have always thought of these people kind of as people, not as superstars.
Yep.
You know what I mean?
That's how I am. Yep.
And people with great gifts that I really appreciated, but I didn't have that stars in the eyes kind of thing. So I just looked at them as people. And that's how I think about it. You know what I mean? I always have, and I always will, I imagine, that just a bunch of cool people. It's fun to work with them.
So how can fans access your solo music? Is it available online anywhere in particular?
It's available everywhere.
Good.
Pretty much. You could, yeah, if you want to listen to it for free, you can listen to it for free at Last.fm or Spotify or a number of other options along that lines. If you want to buy it, you can purchase the whole album on iTunes for $4.99 only, because I've been lowering the prices on all the new releases digitally for Nightmare, because I think it's more important to get the music out there. And plus, you know, we want to encourage people to do that rather than downloading illegally. And you make it available for $5, and you know, you don't have to worry about getting a virus. It's worth the effort. You know, it's worth the $5 for a great album, you know. So you can do that, or you can get it on Amazon. I was looking on Amazon, or NightmareRecords.com, but I was looking on Amazon, and there's so many vendors that have the albums that they get very competitive. You know, some of them only want to make a buck on a CD. So they buy it wholesale from Sony Red, and then they'll sell it on Amazon for like $8, $8.50.
Wow.
So the customer, if they go to Amazon, can get my album cheap. You know, you get the CD for only $8.50 plus shipping, you know?
Yep.
So there's those cool options out there, and I highly recommend them. Yeah, and same thing for all the other Nightmare artists. It's not just an exclusive thing for for Lance King. There's those same options are available for most of our stuff right now. All the new albums are coming out with lower download prices. Yeah, I guess we've got a changing times with the market, and you got to do what you got to do. I would rather sell a 100,000 units downloads for $5 than, a thousand of them for $10.
Sure.
You know what I mean? It makes a lot more sense for the bands and the fans, the torrenting thing and it is kind of going out of fashion right now with all the options like Spotify and Last.fm and these places where fans can pretty much listen to the album, any album they want now, and check it out totally for free. And then if it's cool, they'll go support the artist, you know? And that's what it should be about.
So being that you're also on internet radio, and I know that your show is on Metal Messiah Radio as well as all other people, but how do you feel about internet radio as a whole?
Internet radio as a whole?
Yeah. Playing all your music, such as...
It's also a double-edged sword, to be honest with you.
Really?
Yeah, it is. And you know what? It's... Anything and everything that technology brings to our lives is a double-edged sword. And so you can see the good in it, for sure. And the bad in it isn't quite as easy to see. Over the years, I'll tell you the good and the bad that I've seen with all of the digital aspects of things that have come into our lives with, the internet and digital programs that you can do pretty much anything you want. There's been a great acceleration. What I mean by that is everything is moving not only faster and more efficiently, but in that it's also diminished the value of those that really made the effort before. You know what I mean?
Yep.
So, before you had bands that, would spend $50,000 to $100,000, maybe $300,000 making a record if they, the record company was just spending too much money. And then they would market it to the newspapers and the few metal magazines that were out there and the broadcast radio networks. Well, there weren't the networks then. So you could actually have an indie on all of the, stations, which was an amazing thing that you cannot do anymore since of the legislation that happened in the 80s. The change broadcast radio and allowed them to create these monopolies. So you don't have those aspects anymore where something can take off on broadcast radio. But now you have this internet, you have the satellite radio, you have all these more options. With the internet, you have unlimited amounts of places that you can find reviews or you could get reviews, but then you have to find them too, and you have to all these different things. Now you have, here's an illustration, 1980. You look at a magazine and you find all the metal releases that were released that year.
Yep.
Maybe there were 80 of them. Okay. Now, flash forward to today. At the end of the year, how many metal releases do you think will have come out?
About 10,000, depending upon the genre.
Probably, no, I mean, if you just generalize, I think it's probably going to be around 7,000
albums.
Yeah,
about that.
That year. So, back then, you had about 80, and everybody knew them. And because there were only certain places you could find that information, it would be on the radio that they knew they liked. It would be in the magazines that they knew they liked. and, you know, their memorabilia would be in the record stores. Now you flash forward to where we're at now, and there's 7,000 bands, and they're spread out all over the internet, and millions of places, and millions of chat rooms, and now there's only 35, 40 people in that chat room, versus, you know, broadcast radio days when there might be, oh, I don't know, 100,000 people listening on the station at any one time, you know what I mean? And things could blow up really fast. Now you have the smoldering effect rather than burning up. You have a smoldering effect for bands that are doing good. You know, it's kind of a smoldering effect. But there's a longevity in that because you can continue to build. Whereas before, you might flash really hot for a year or two and then die. Now, you can have a really long, consistent career and keep making new fans along the way and building it up. So, I mean, there's two sides to everything that comes along, and it's really interesting how the music business has changed. I like internet radio. I think it's a cool thing because you can come up with all kinds of highly specialized shows that dive into each little genre and niche separation, and that gives everybody a voice. That's really cool.
So what exactly has been your biggest challenge as a musician, either for your solo album or just in general, Lance?
Well, I think the biggest challenge is always the same for every musician, honestly. It's to get the music awareness, to get an awareness out to the largest amount of people possible, to give an album in a short life, because albums have kind of short lifespans, really, you know what I mean? And with the digital age and so many albums coming out, they get shorter sometimes because people are only promoting them for so long and there's only so much space out there, you know? And then, you know, unlike back in the day when you bought a metal magazine and it might have a coffee table life of a couple of months, now you have a website life of a couple of days to a week on the front page, and then it might disappear into obscurity on other pages, but it'll still be searchable. But you know what I mean? To really catch a lot of faces and a lot of ears, it's... That's the challenge. The challenge is to really be able to get the music out to people, to masses these days. And I think it's always been the challenge, but now it's become more of one, I think, because the opportunities and the options of disseminating the information has gone so wide with the internet. You got to be everywhere if you really want people to see it.
That's very true. So,
you know what I mean?
Of course. I mean, being...
And it's a lot more challenging to be everywhere than it ever was before. Everywhere is a whole lot of places.
Well, you got to be in five different continents in one time, you know?
Right. Well, I mean, look how many, like, just for instance, in the early 80s, how many magazines and radio stations actually supported the genre. You know, you maybe had 1,000 outposts.
Yep.
Right? Yep. Worldwide.
Yep.
Now how many do you think you got?
It's true.
Millions.
Yep. You're absolutely right.
Millions. So, like, overwhelmed. You could do it literally every day, all day long, and just promote yourself and still only get, I don't know. I don't know. I guess it depends on how effective you are at marketing and how many people would actually see the album, you know, or hear about the album or listen to one of the songs even, you know what I mean, or read a review. I have no idea how many people you could come into contact now with that sort of thing. I do my best to get the word out, but that's the challenge. I'd say the biggest challenge has always been to get the music out to as many people as possible.
So who actually would you like to tour with as a dream with your solo career? What bands?
That's a good question. Well, I think a good lineup to play with would probably be Symphony X or Camelot, Nightwish. Love to go out and play with the Megadeth guys because I'm friends with them. Dream Theater, be a cool option. You know, similar bands, I guess, that I enjoy and respect, that have worked hard and been able to stay together. And through that challenge, I have great respect for those musicians that are able to stay together as the nucleus of a band for a long period of time. Because that's probably, well, actually, I changed my answer to your last question. That's the hardest. Stay together.
There you go.
That's the hardest.
But as far as that goes, do you think you're probably going to record a second solo CD?
Yeah. Last one was so fun and flowed so much easier than anything I'd ever done in the past. Heck yeah.
Do you have any songs written for it right now?
You know, the irony is, yesterday, a friend of mine that I had invited to help write songs with on the first album, but he didn't have time, and he didn't respond. Yesterday he sent me ten tracks, full song arrangement, 10 tracks.
Wow.
And I was just listening to him today. I mean, I don't think all 10 are going to make it, but there was a lot of cool stuff in there. There was a lot of cool stuff. So who knows? Who knows? You know, it could come together pretty quickly.
So what do you actually like to do when you're not being Mr. Nightmare Executive, as well as also, you know, your solo career? Do you have any hobbies? What do you like to do?
Yep, I got a lot of hobbies. You know, it comes with probably a little bit of ADHD. You get bored easy, so you gotta do a lot of different things. I like to kickbox. I'm a Muay Thai instructor now after 12 years of training, and I teach up-and-coming MMA fighters how to do their standing game. And so I enjoy teaching and training and sparring and that kind of thing. I love motorcycles. I've got a speedboat. I love to go out on the river, Mississippi and St. Croix River, and spend time hanging out on sandbars. I love nature, love to hike, love downhill skiing and snowboarding. I skied I started when I was 7, and I skied up until last year. And in Minnesota, I don't know if you've been here in the wintertime, it's cold and those hills are short. I grew up in Portland. I learned to ski at Mount Hood, where the U.S. ski team trains, so there's some really challenging skiing out there. And I was just bored skiing out here anymore, so I decided to take up boarding. And the first day was a little sore, but I really enjoyed it. I had a blast the last couple of years, so that's one of the things I have to do.
That's pretty cool. So what do you think 2012 holds for Mr. Lanskin that I have not covered yet about your solo career or anything else you would like to mention to your fans? Are you accessible online?
Yeah, Lanskin Vox. Check it out. LanskinVox.com. All of the tunes, that is the question you asked, right?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, all the tunes from all my back catalog are available there, with the exception of, like, the albums that I may have only sang, you know, cameos on, or one song or type thing, but you can see where I did that, and the album covers and information about those albums are on the site as well. But there's samples of everything I've ever recorded as far as full albums go on the website. And, you know, I haven't gotten my bio together yet because it's just kind of arduous. And honestly, I don't like talking about myself that much. So I haven't actually got that together yet. But I had managed to get the discography together there, and there's a lot of information on the new album. I'm going to post the lyrics pretty soon, actually, on the website, which is kind of cool. So for those of you that have heard it and may be curious as to the meanings a little bit more and haven't dug into that, you could check that out. And I may post more information soon on the whole concept of the album and what each song really means and the varying sides of meanings, because there are multiple meanings in the album. There's my personal meaning, and there's the number prompt meaning, and there's the more spiritual meaning, and there's lots of different symbolisms in the album to look at. It's a very deep album for me, so I could continue to, you know, release tidbits of information about this album for about 10 years, I think, because so much went into it.
Very cool. Is there anything else you want to mention to your fans before we close out this interview, Mr. Lance King?
Support independent music. Support those bands that you love. You know, if you dig their stuff and you hear it on Spotify, go buy the download or buy the album. Help those guys out, because I tell you what, sales are sucking out there. I know it. I see it firsthand. And the bands are suffering. And I think that even though bands are getting down and you can record an album, the smart ones are recording albums cheaper, they still need money to continue to be able to bring you the good music. And they still need money to get out there and play for you more than ever. Touring is not going to happen. You're not going to see the bands you want if you don't help support them, because they just simply won't have the ability, the resources to do that. So keep that in mind. That's my message for everyone, because, and it's not just me. It's everybody. So anybody you love musically, help support them.
Awesome. This is
that's my message.
This is,
and you know, you're doing that. You're a big supporter of the scene. I appreciate that.
Oh, it's my pleasure. Lance, stick around. I have a few things to ask you about off the air, but stick around, guys. This is DJ Sin signing out, Metal Messiah Radio.